If you open up the news today, you'd probably think tech companies are just completely invincible.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Right? Like regulators are constantly just scrambling to pick up the pieces. You get, I don't know, the 10th lawsuit against OpenAI filed in San Diego, or Meta battling for an exit ramp in Santa Fe.
It's a mess.
It is. It all just feels like this chaotic, reactive mess. And honestly, it's really easy to feel like this technology is simply happening to you. Like you have absolutely no say in it.
But you'd be wrong.
Exactly, you'd be wrong. Because this week, we're looking at something totally different. Three state lawmakers from entirely different political backgrounds, by the way, did the impossible.
Yeah, they really did.
They wrote AI laws that the tech lobbyists basically couldn't touch. So we are pulling from this incredibly insightful Sunday reflection in the Conversational AI Watch newsletter. This is issue 48 from May 17th, 2026.
A really great issue.
It really is. And the mission today for our deep dive is to look at the people actually writing the rules of the future. Okay, let's unpack this.
So we have to start by looking at what these three legislators actually share. Because their overarching strategy reveals a ton about how modern tech lobbying operates right now.
Right.
Because when regulation is looming, massive platforms, they don't usually fight it outright anymore.
No, that looks terrible for PR.
Exactly. They don't want the bad optics. So instead, they try to shape it. They push for these very specific, watered-down types of legislation.
I want to pause right there, actually, because when you say they shape it, what does that actually look like on the ground? Are we talking about like campaign donations or
No, it's structural,
structural in the law itself?
entirely structural. They advocate for soft regulations that rely purely on user disclosures,
Yeah.
right? Like just put a warning label on it.
Yeah.
Or they push heavily for exemptions for what they call embedded services.
Okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around that term. If I'm using an app, what is an embedded service versus like a regular AI product?
Right. So an embedded service is when the AI isn't the main product you're buying or downloading.
Okay.
It's baked into a platform you already use. So think about Meta AI hidden inside your Instagram search bar,
Oh, sure.
or Google Gemini integrated into your email, or Apple Intelligence running silently in the background of your operating
You're
system.
not going to a separate website for it.
Exactly. You aren't going to ChatGPT.com. And the tech giants, they argue that these embedded products are fundamentally different from standalone AI chatbots.
I see. So they're basically arguing that the heavy regulatory obligations, like intense age verification or, safety protocols, should only fall on those standalone products,
Yes.
not on their underlying embedded infrastructure. Which, I mean, that sounds a lot like a massive architectural loophole.
It is a massive loophole.
It's like, okay, it's like mandating a bank vault have 2-foot-thick steel doors on the front, but letting the architects leave the back wall made of drywall just because they call it a, a decorative feature.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it, actually. Because if you leave the drywall in place, the vault just isn't secure.
Right.
So the shared strategy of the three lawmakers we're examining today, it was a flat, uncompromising refusal to write the bills the platforms wanted.
They just said no.
They said no. They essentially demanded steel walls on all sides. And they did it by spending their political capital early,
Right.
before it was trendy or safe to do so.
Right, because going first in legislation, that means you have to absorb all the initial friction from the tech lobby.
Exactly. You take the hits.
So they took the heat, absorbed the friction, and built these ready-made, highly portable legislative templates. And now, I mean, other lawmakers across the country can just lift these proven frameworks without having to fight that initial battle.
Precisely. They did the heavy lifting.
So, who is actually absorbing this friction? Let's start with the state that just completely shattered the conventional wisdom about partisan divides in tech law. We are heading to Georgia.
Yeah, Georgia's fascinating right now. We're looking at Jason Enovitarte. He's the first Latino Republican to lead the Georgia State Senate. And he understands political momentum implicitly. I mean, he won his first elected seat back in 2003.
Wait, how old was he?
He was 19.
19. That's wild.
Yeah. So today, as Senate Majority Leader, he essentially controls the calendar. He decides what sees the light of day on the floor and, what just quietly dies in committee.
Right. And he chose to put his own name and his political weight behind Senate Bill 540,
Yes.
which is a chatbot safety bill for minors. The source material notes it requires chatbot operators to clearly disclose to a minor that they are interacting with an AI, not a human.
Yeah.
But it goes way further than that, right?
Oh, much further. That disclosure has to happen at the beginning of every session and then at least every 3 hours during a continuous interaction.
Okay, think about the user experience design there. Like, modern apps are designed for frictionless, endless engagement, just scrolling and chatting forever.
Exactly. So forcing a hard stop every 3 hours just to remind a user that they're talking to a machine, that fundamentally alters the core design philosophy of these platforms.
That's a massive operational requirement.
It is. And the bill also mandates strict age verification, parental controls, and this very specific self-harm and suicide response protocol.
How does that work?
If a minor expresses suicidal ideation, the AI has to actively refer them to a crisis hotline. You can't just change the subject.
Wait, hold on. I need to push back here for a second.
Sure.
A Southern Republican majority leader's legislative resume is usually built on things like constitutional carry or school choice or tax cuts.
Right.
And Navarro Corte has all of those. He's done all that. So why use his heavy-hitting, top-tier political capital on an AI chatbot bill? And more importantly, how on earth did he get it passed without the tech lobby just gutting it?
Well, it's because he recognizes a massive gap in the legal architecture. Mm-hmm. And he sees how fast the technology is moving. When the platform lobbyists fought in committee for that embedded services carve-out we talked about.
The drywall in the vault.
Exactly. They even brought concrete amendment language authored by a fellow Republican.
Oh, wow. So they thought they had it in the bag.
They really did. But an Evitarsi committee voted it down. He killed the carve-out completely. So under SB 540, Meta AI is covered. Google Gemini is covered. Any AI simulating human conversation with a minor is covered, no matter where it sits in the platform stack.
And what about the final vote? Because the newsletter mentions a 54-0 vote in the Georgia Senate.
Yeah, unanimous.
In this highly polarized political climate, how do you get every single Republican and Democrat to agree on stringent tech regulation?
You do it by executing a monumental doctrinal shift.
Right.
For years, you know, the conventional wisdom was that this issue was totally fractured. Republican state houses focused on this kids' online safety frame.
Right.
While Democratic state houses focused on the consumer protection frame, and Evitarte just merged them. By pushing this through with unanimous support, he proved this isn't a fringe issue. It's not a partisan issue.
Here's where it gets really interesting. He essentially created a master blueprint for the South because Southern Republican state houses historically move on the templates that other Southern Republican state houses use.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The path is completely clear now for states like Tennessee, Alabama, Kentucky, Texas to just adopt this text with, you know, minimal modification.
So the tech lobbyists can no longer argue that a strict no carve-out AI bill can't pass in a conservative chamber.
That narrative is totally broken. The bill is signed. It takes effect July 1st, 2027.
Wow. Okay, so Georgia closed the loophole for hidden software, and they targeted teenagers and older minors. But what happens when the end user is too young to even understand what software is?
That's a whole different ballgame.
Right, because that requires a completely different legal weapon, which is exactly what a former detective out in California realized. Let's look at State Senator Steve Padilla.
Yeah, Padilla's a Democrat representing a border district down in southern San Diego County. And before politics, he spent 13 years in law enforcement.
Okay.
His final assignment as a detective was the domestic violence and child abuse caseload.
Oh, man. That drastically changes how a person evaluates vulnerability and risk.
Yeah.
You aren't just looking at abstract policy anymore. You are looking at very real patterns of harm.
And it fundamentally shaped how he approached legislation. Padilla basically built an evidentiary file, similar to how a detective prepares a case for a district attorney.
Interesting.
He focused heavily on the tragic case of Adam Rain.
Remind me about that one.
He was a 15-year-old California boy who ended his life in late 2024. His family filed a wrongful death suit, alleging that he had been encouraged to do so by ChatGPT.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, the suit claimed he repeatedly disclosed his intent to the chatbot leading up to his death.
That is just awful. But Padilla used that evidentiary record to push through Senate Bill 243, which the newsletter says is the first state-level chatbot safety law signed anywhere.
Yes.
It's a disclosure regime, but the source highlights this crucial mechanism. It gives families a private right of action against non-compliant or negligent developers. Now, I hear that term thrown around a lot in legal circles.
It's a big one.
Yeah, but what does a private right of action actually mean for you or me, like the everyday user?
It is the single mechanism that tech companies fear the most.
Really? Why?
Because usually when a state passes a tech regulation, enforcement is left entirely to the state's attorney general.
Okay.
But the AG has limited staff, right? They have limited funding. They can only realistically pursue a few big cases a year.
Right, they have to prioritize.
Exactly. A private right of action changes the math completely. It means any private citizen who is harmed can hire their own lawyer and sue the company directly.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, it opens the floodgates to thousands of potential lawsuits. It basically turns every single plaintiff's attorney in the state into an enforcement mechanism.
So a private right of action terrifies them because it scales liability instantly.
Instantly, yes.
But I still have a problem with the disclosure part of this. A disclosure might work for a teenager looking at a screen, but what about a toddler?
Mm.
I mean, you can't hand a legal disclosure to a four-year-old.
No, you can't, which is exactly the gap Padilla identified, and it leads directly to his second major move. Just 3 weeks after SB 243 took effect, he introduced Senate Bill 867.
Okay, what does that one do?
This targets a completely different developmental stage. It prohibits the manufacture, sale, or exchange of any toy intended for children 12, and under that, that includes a generative AI chatbot.
A complete moratorium.
A total ban until 2031.
Think about the toys the young kids in your life play with. If you put an AI inside a teddy bear, it isn't software to a toddler.
No, not at all.
It's a talking bear. It's a friend.
The psychological term for that is personification. Developmental psychology shows that young children simply lack the theory of mind required to distinguish between simulated empathy from a machine,
right,
and real empathy from a living being. And Padilla deliberately added all this developmental literature to the legislative record.
To prove his case.
Exactly. It proves that user disclosures fail completely for that demographic.
Right.
You just have to ban the product class entirely until the safety research catches up.
What's fascinating here is Padilla's strategy of combining these two laws. The source material actually calls it a stacking strategy. I'm trying to visualize this. Are you saying that if a company screws up and releases an AI toy anyway, they get hit with both laws at once?
That is the structural brilliance of what he did. By layering a disclosure law that carries a private right of action with a moratorium on an entire product class, he armed plaintiff's attorneys with a devastating combo.
Wow.
Because if a company violates the moratorium and sells an AI toy, they're inherently failing the disclosure requirements, too.
Right, because you can't properly disclose to a four-year-old.
Exactly. So lawsuits will allege both violations within the exact same complaint. It's a highly effective legal maneuver to stack liability, and it creates a formidable blueprint for protecting the youngest consumers.
That is incredibly strategic. Okay, so we've looked at teenagers in Georgia, and we've looked at toddlers in California. Now let's move to adults, specifically adult mental health, because there is a completely different profession drawing a very rigid line in the sand out in Colorado.
Yes. Let's examine Gretchen Ryden. She is a first-term Democratic state representative from a Denver suburb. But before she walked into the statehouse, she spent years practicing as a licensed clinical social worker and a licensed addictions counselor.
So she actually practiced in the field. She was watching these AI tools enter clinical spaces in real time.
Yes, she was on the front lines.
She knew what helped and what harmed before she ever drafted a single word of legislation.
And that background is everything. She authored House Bill 26-1195, which restricts AI and psychotherapy. Now, normally, when lawmakers try to restrict AI in health spaces, the tech lobby's standard defense is to claim the lawmakers are just, you know, technologically illiterate.
Right, like you just don't get it. You're stifling innovation out of fear.
Exactly. But they couldn't use that argument on Ryden. Her CV completely neutralized their primary defense. She understands the technology, and she intimately understands the clinical relationship.
The bill codifies exactly what the American Psychological Association has been demanding. It draws a bright clinical line. But how does that line actually function, like in a therapist's office?
Well, the statute essentially dictates that AI can handle administrative work, right, or supplementary support, but the regulated professional must own the clinical decision.
Okay.
AI cannot engage in therapeutic communications with a client without real-time professional oversight. It absolutely cannot generate therapeutic recommendations or treatment plans on its own.
That makes total sense.
Furthermore, if an AI is transcribing the session for notes, which is getting common, the clinician is legally required to obtain written, informed consent from the client.
So what does this all mean for the AI itself? Does the law basically treat the AI like a medical intern rather than like an attending doctor?
That analogy perfectly captures the mechanism of law. A medical intern can take notes, they can prep a chart, they can suggest ideas to the team, but the attending physician have to oversee the actual diagnosis.
But they have to sign off on the treatment plan.
And they carry the ultimate liability. The AI is the intern, it can never be the attending.
And the momentum behind this is just staggering. Because the newsletter mentions it was backed by an ER nurse in the Senate, and Ryden's bill passed the Colorado House unanimously, midnight on a Wednesday, clearing the General Assembly, heading straight to the governor's desk.
It's a massive win, and it creates this highly specific, portable template for health departments and licensing boards nationwide. It also highlights a completely new political reality. Clinical credentials are the ultimate authority for authoring AI policy in healthcare.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If you hold the medical license, you have the structural authority to draw the line between your profession and a software vendor's product.
Which brings us to the ultimate question for you, the listener, as you watch this all unfold in the news. We have three wildly different state blueprints laid out here. A unanimous vote in Georgia, unanimous passage in Colorado, bills navigating complex committee structures in California. The momentum at the state level is undeniable.
It really is.
Yeah.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights a glaring void at the national level.
Yep.
Congress and federal regulators, like the FTC, have been bogged down in these endless theoretical debates about innovation versus safety. They have been incredibly slow to act.
While the states are actively building these structural foundations.
Exactly. By proving that strict rules like rejecting embedded carve-outs, stacking liability for non-compliance, and enforcing rigid clinical boundaries can pass with overwhelming, often bipartisan support, these state architects are showing the federal government exactly how to regulate the chatbot space. They aren't waiting for Washington to figure it out.
They're forcing Washington's hand. And this brings us back to where we started. We begin this deep dive talking about the actual people behind the laws. A Georgia Republican majority leader, a California detective, a Colorado clinical social worker.
Yeah.
They all use their deeply specific life experiences to evaluate the legislation the platforms wanted, and they systematically dismantled it to write the legislation the public actually needs.
And because they moved early, absorbing that initial lobbying pressure we talked about, they've altered the trajectory of AI regulation for the entire country.
And that trajectory is about to collide with reality very, very soon. Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to mull over. According to the source material, tomorrow opens with a major federal compliance deadline. The federal Take It Down Act flips, meaning platforms finally have to remove that they were ordered to remove.
This impending deadline raises a super urgent question about jurisdiction and power.
Exactly. As more states pass these airtight, highly specific, locally enforced blueprints, how will the federal government react? Will Congress simply look at the frameworks built by Navarrete, Padilla, and Ryden and adopt these state laws as the new national standard? Or will the massive tech platforms pivot their lobbying money to Washington and try to use future federal regulations to preempt, override, and just erase these strict state rules?
It is the classic American battle of state versus federal power, playing out right on a digital frontier.
It's a battle you definitely need to keep a close eye on, because right now the states are writing the blueprint. But whether Washington builds on it or tries to bulldoze it is the next great fight. We started by talking about the Daily News feeling like a casualty report of tech drama. Thanks to these three lawmakers, the story is shifting. We're moving from a body count to a blueprint, and that blueprint is being drawn by people who refuse to leave the structural loopholes open.